Okay, I call the meeting of the House, the Minnesota House of Representatives Higher Education Committee to order, or division to order. Welcome to the committee today. We do have a quorum, and I want to know if somebody would like to move the minutes for April 2nd.
So move, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Representative Vang moves approval of the minutes for April 2nd, 2019. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for April 22nd, 2019 have been passed. Today we're going to have an informational hearing and walk through the governor's proposal or budget proposal for higher education. And so I will be at the testifying table, so Vice Chair Pryor will take over.
All right, thank you, members. As Chair Bernardi just explained, today we'll be walking through House File 2544. This bill will be our omnibus vehicle bill, and we will be posting a DE amendment tomorrow. However, many of the current provisions will be concluded in the omnibus, and the Chair would like to have them discussed in bill format before we walk through the omnibus bill next Monday. So, Representative Bernardi, please present your bill.
Thank you very much. I think our members have been presented information about this bill throughout our hearings we've had, but we wanted to just do an official walkthrough of what the bill looks like, and I want to let members know that we have it the format of the governor's first budget. We felt it's, you know, we discussed how we are able to save resources and kind of prevent our staff from going into overdrive when we're going to be doing a DE amendment anyway. So we will talk about the differences in the bill as we go through. And with us today, I have Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. Meredith Fergus is available from the Office of Higher Education, too, and Commissioner Dennis Olson. So welcome to the committee, and I'll have them walk through the sections of the bill.
All right. Commissioner Olson, are you first up? And would you please state your name for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dennis Olson, Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to walk through Chair Bernardi's bill on behalf of the governor's revised recommendations. And I am up first only to offer this brief introduction and to be here for questions, but really going to turn it over to Ms. Grimes to walk through the details of each of the provisions.
Thank you, Ms. Grimes. Would you please state your name for the record?
Madam Chair, I'm Tricia Grimes. I'm the Acting Legislative Liaison at the Office of Higher Education. This bill is starting right out at the top here. The total increase in the governor's revised recommendation is $164.684 million for the biennium. And I'm going to head right into the Office of Higher Education amounts. I'm going to hit once lightly the state grant appropriations, since the committee has talked about the state grants on several appropriations, and there are many other items in the bill that the committee has not talked about before. But I'm happy to respond to questions. Subdivision 2 on page 2 is the state grant appropriation. The governor's revised recommendation is an increase of $43.076 million for the biennium, and that assumes a 2% increase in tuition each year at Minnesota State and 2.5% increase at the University of Minnesota. If there were a zero tuition increase in both systems, the governor's recommendation would cost $25 million for the biennium. Moving along to Subdivision 3, post-secondary child care grants, that is $6.694 million each year. In fiscal year 2018, 1,900 students received awards, and the average award was $2,500 in the post-secondary child care grant program. At the end of the bill, there is language that would authorize the Office of Higher Education to begin a change in the way the child care grant program is providing money to students, and you do it as a supplement to the state grant program instead of a separate post-secondary child care grant program. Subdivision 4 is state work study. In fiscal year 2018, 9,450 students received state work study earnings, and the median earnings were $1,800. Total earnings were $19.9 million. And why is the total earnings more than the appropriation? That is because we require at least a 25% match from the institutions. These are mostly on-campus jobs. Subdivision 5 is interstate tuition reciprocity. There were 11,900 Minnesota students who attended North Dakota institutions and 4,000 North Dakota students who attended Minnesota institutions. And then there were also, of course, students from Wisconsin attending in Minnesota and students from Minnesota attending in Wisconsin. Wisconsin actually paid Minnesota $5.5 million in fiscal year 2018, but that goes into the general fund. It doesn't actually appear in our bill as an offset to this appropriation. This appropriation basically goes to pay North Dakota for the fact that they educate more Minnesota students than we educate North Dakota students. Of course, Minnesota has a much larger population than Minnesota has. Subdivision 6 is the Safety Officer Survivor Program. This is $100,000 each year, and it's the same as it was last biennium. There were 12 recipients in this program in fiscal year 2018. Subdivision 7 is Indian Scholarships. 845 students received funding in fiscal 18. And Subdivision 8 is Tribal Colleges. White Earth, Leech Lake, and Red Lake Tribal Colleges received funding. The appropriation is $150,000 a year, and it's to serve students who are attending those tribal colleges who are considered not being beneficiaries of those tribes. So either they are indigenous students who are not officially recognized as a member of that tribe, or they are non-Indian students, you know, white students probably, that are being served by those tribal colleges. Subdivision 9 is the Intervention for College Attendance Program grants. 3,800 students in grades 6 through 12, as well as some post-secondary students, were served by this. It's $839,000 each year, which is a $168,000 increase. So the governor recommended an increase of 25% in this program, and that recommendation did not change between the governor's original recommendation and his revised recommendation. So it goes to 3,800 students in grades 6 through 12, and the grants go to nonprofits, community organizations, and post-secondary institutions to run college prep programs. Subdivision 10 is student and parent information. It's $122,000 each year, no increase from last biennium. And that pays for publications online and print, websites, social media, and so forth in our efforts to communicate with students so that they know that financial aid available is available and post-secondary attendance is possible for them. Subdivision 11 is the Get Ready program. It's $180,000 each year. This is part of the matching funds for federal funds of $3.4 million a year in the federal Gear Up program. This is actually a program where Minnesota invented the program before the feds adopted it nationwide and imitated the Minnesota program very closely. So this is part of the matching funds for the federal $3.4 million a year program. Subdivision 13 is the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership. That's $45,000 a year. That's the same as last biennium. Subdivision 14 is a new program called Minnesota Reconnect. The revised recommendation is for $2 million a year, even though the amount shown here is $4 million a year. This connects adults age 25 to 40 who attended post-secondary and did not receive a certificate or a degree with navigators and help with obstacles such as financial holds that may be preventing them from going back and finishing their post-secondary education. It will serve about 1,000 students. This program was started with a Lumina grant, a foundation grant that got it started. Subdivision 15 is United Family Medicine Residents. This is for primary care residents. Subdivision 16 is MinLink, Gateway, and Minitex. which is Library Technology, Electronic Databases, and Resource Sharing. $5.9 million a year. Again, that's the same as the funding for last biennium. Subdivision 17 is the Statewide Longitudinal Education Data System, affectionately known as SLEDS. And this is $1.882 million each year, which is a $1 million increase each year. And most of that money replaces expiring federal funds for the Early Childhood Longitudinal Data System, and some of it also enhances SLEDS to meet demand for outcomes information. Subdivision 18 is Hennepin Healthcare. This is for graduate family medical education for primary care providers. It's $645,000 each year, which is the same as last biennium. Subdivision 19 is College Possible, $250,000 each year. And Representative Vang had a bill on this same program this year. Subdivision 20 is Spinal Cord Injury and Traumatic Brain Injury Research Grant Program. This was a new program assigned to the Office of Higher Education last year. It's $3 million each year. And Representative Walgamott had a bill that would have also appropriated money for this program. Subdivision 21 is the Summer Academic Enrichment Program, $250,000 a year, which is a 100% increase. It's a doubling of the level of funding for this program. The scholarships are up to $1,000, and they would serve about 250 additional students in grades 3 through 12 for summer programs. 24 of the 35 programs offered through Summer Academic Enrichment are science programs. Subdivision 22 is Dual Training Competency Grants. This is a partnership with the Office of Higher Education and the Department of Labor and Industry. The governor's revised recommendation has a zero increase for this, and it was a 50% increase in the original recommendation. It combines on-the-job training with classroom instruction, so workers earn while learning. 112 awards went to 67 employers. 67% of those were in Greater Minnesota. They were in 41 legislative districts, and there were a total of 913 trainees. Subdivision 22 is the part of the dual training competency grants that goes to the Department of Labor and Industry. It's $200,000 each year, which is the same as the level of funding for last biennium. Department of Labor and Industry identifies the competency standards for the occupations. Subdivision 24 is concurrent enrollment courses. This is grants to develop new concurrent enrollment high school courses for career and technical education. It's $340,000 each year, which is the same amount as last biennium. And there will be an amendment that will ask for some change in the language for this program that we will talk about at the end if that's acceptable to the committee. Subdivision 24 is $25,000 each year for campus sexual assault reporting. And Subdivision 26 is campus sexual violence prevention and response coordinator, $150,000 each year. This is a position at the Office of Higher Education to work with the post-secondary institutions on their procedures when it comes to preventing and responding to campus sexual violence. Subdivision 27 is emergency assistance for post-secondary students. This is matching grants to post-secondary institutions that have homeless students. It's $175,000 each year. And this is a priority of the Student Advisory Council that advises the Office of Higher Education. Subdivision 28 is teacher candidate grants. This money is in addition to the governor's recommendation for an increase to the Minnesota Department of Education of $1.8 million for the biennium. It's $500,000 each year, which is the same as it was last biennium. And the money that is in the Office of Higher Education's budget served 120 students in fiscal year 19. Subdivision 29 is the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program. This is grants to students completing student teaching. The awards are prioritized for teacher candidates in shortage areas and teacher candidates who belong to racial or ethnic groups underrepresented in the Minnesota teacher workforce. It helped 1,022 teachers in fiscal 19, partly because there was an appropriation in 2016 that did not cancel and carried over. This particular appropriation funds 200 students at $1,000 each year. Subdivision 30 is the Large Animal Veterinarian Loan Forgiveness Program, $375,000 each year. It serves about 5 borrowers per year. And subdivision... I'm sorry, I'm getting off my lines. Sorry.
Actually, yours is saying you're reading correctly, but it's different in this bill.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Thank you for pointing that up. Thank you. So, subdivision 30.
Just 1 second. And we missed subdivision 27, Student and Employer Connection Information System. But that's where we got off.
Thank you. Sorry.
Is that? Did we already talk through all of them? Sorry, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask staff if we got through each of the if we missed anything.
We missed this. We were fine. It was all in order.
Okay, but we missed 27.
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
Madam Chair, sorry, my mistake. Subdivision 27, the Student Employer Connection Information System, in the Governor's revised recommendation, this amount is zero. This amount is being taken out of the bill. We worked with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and their vendor, and they created the web tool last biennium, and they did not need ongoing funding for it. So the Governor's revised recommendation removed this funding. I apologize.
Okay.
Okay, Ms. Graham, can you tell us then the number that subdivision that we're on now?
All right, so we're on subdivision 30.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
I'm sorry, 31, subdivision 31, Large Animal Veterinarian Loan Forgiveness. That's $375,000 a year and serves 5 borrowers per year. Subdivision 32 is the Agricultural Educators Loan Forgiveness Program. That's $50,000 each year. And awards began in fiscal year 2019, so we do not have a full year of awards yet. So. Subdivision 33 is the Aviation Degree Loan Forgiveness Program. That's $25,000 each year, and awards began in fiscal year 2019, and Representative Nornes had a bill related to this program. Subdivision 34 is grants for students with intellectual and developmental disabilities, $200,000 each year, which is the same as last biennium. And we do have some changes to this language in an amendment that will be offered once we get done talking about the main bill. The campuses that received money in this program are Bethel University, Central Lakes, and Bridgewater Community and Technical Colleges. Subdivision 35 is the Loan Repayment Assistance Program for attorneys serving low-income clients. It's $25,000 each year, and the money went to 45 attorneys. House File 2363 by Representative Moeller would have also addressed this program. Subdivision 36 is Minnesota Independence College and Community at $1 million a year, which is zero increase from last biennium. This is for need-based scholarships and tuition reduction, served 49 students, and Representative Howard had a bill that would have provided money for this program. Subdivision 37 is agency administration of $4.577 million each year, which is a zero increase. The Office of Higher Education has 25.5 full-time equivalent staff that are paid from the general fund out of this appropriation. Okay, subdivision 38 is balances forward. It says any balance in the first year is available for the second year. Subdivision 39 is language on transfers. Instead of letting bits of money accumulate, you know, not be spent from particular programs, it gives the Office of Higher Education authority to transfer from one program to another. That usually happens in the second year of the biennium. And new language in this section adds the Intervention for College Attendance Program, Summer Academic Enrichment Program, and Student Parent Information to the list of programs that can send and receive funds. So we manage to get the best use out of the funds that are appropriated. Madam Chair, I'm going to just speak briefly to the appropriations for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'll do the broad brush things. If you have questions about those individual provisions, there are people from Minnesota State here that can speak more to those. The Governor's revised recommendation is an increase of $64.798 million for the biennium, which is 13.194 million more than the total shown here. And for the central offices and shared unit services unit, there is no increase for operations and maintenance. That's where the governor's recommendation is an increase of 56.798 million for the biennium. Are we back on track? Okay. There is an $8 million increase on the integrated statewide record system. It's known really by two names, ISRS and Next Generation. And $4.115 million each year for the Learning Network of Minnesota. For the University of Minnesota, the governor's revised recommendation is an increase of $52.034 million for the biennium, which is $11.854 million higher than the amount shown here. And then I'm going to skip over most of the rest of the University of Minnesota and take you to Article 2. Page 19. Thank you. And these are the language provisions of the bill. Section 1 in Article 2 amends 127A.70, the early childhood longitudinal data system language, and establishes that early childhood system in statute and integrates it into the statewide longitudinal education data system. And the Office of Higher Education is the lead agency on this data system, even though it involves the Office of Higher Education, the Minnesota Department of Education, DEED, and several other agencies. Section 2 amends language on the state grant program. It speaks to the assigned family responsibility in the state grant program. The existing language reduces the assigned family responsibility for each category of students by 6 percentage language points. The governor's revised recommendation would have actually reduced those by 5 percentage points for each category. Section 3 is the Pell fill-in language in the state grant program. This would fill in for unawarded federal Pell grants for Minnesota DREAM Act students and students without a high school diploma or the equivalent. We expect it to affect between 485 and 500 students. Section 4 amends living and miscellaneous expense allowance. The language here says to 110% of poverty. The governor's revised recommendation would make that 108% of poverty.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that number? 108%
of poverty.
108, thank you.
Section 5 amends language on dual training grants and adds authority to for those grants to include costs for travel, lodging, and meals associated with the training. The Office of Higher Education, in running this program, discovered that there are a number of individuals who are effectively utilizing this training who have to travel from their home 2 or 3 hours to another location to get the training that's needed. Section 6 amends the language on the dual training grants, increasing the grant to $7,500 per year per employee. But it limits the costs for travel, lodging, and meals to no more than $1,500 per employee. Section 7 is new language on the Minnesota Reconnect program, and we did talk about that a couple of times in legislative hearings. Section 8 is language on the Minnesota Post-Secondary Child Care Grant. It says that for fiscal years 20 and 21, the Office of Higher Education may adjust the cost of attendance in the state grant program to include child care expenses after consultation with post-secondary institutions and prior written notice to the chairs and ranking members of the higher ed committees. And then there is will be some language on Minnesota College Savings Plan grants in the amendment.
If any, so far we've not seen any questions, but this is probably a good point to pause if there's any clarification people need at this point. Okay. Please proceed then.
Okay, so Vice Chair Pryor, what we'd like to do is just talk about the amendments that would have, if we were going to be voting on this bill or whatever. I believe we're just going to be, it's informational, so we're just going to be talking about the amendments today. Mm-hmm. And so if Ms. Grimes could lead us in those.
Ms. Grimes.
Thank you. The first section in Amendment A190322, is about concurrent enrollment courses. This language would allow the agency to use some of the funds in the appropriation to create new sections of post-secondary online courses to increase the number of teachers with the appropriate credentials to teach concurrent enrollment courses. The language also clarifies that the program will be a competitive grant program. One of the things the Office of Higher Education discovered as it was implementing this relatively new program the last 2 years is that the goal of the original appropriation was to increase the number of career and technical education courses offered for concurrent enrollment, and there is a shortage of teachers in the pipeline that have the right certification and credits as recognized by the Higher Learning Commission to teach these courses. And so we're asking for language that would allow us to use some of the money to work with post-secondary institutions to develop online courses that would help the teachers that need to get these credits in order to be able to continue to teach these courses. This is somewhat similar to a bill, House File 2427, by Representative Bierman this year. The second section is grants to students with intellectual disabilities. This language would allow the agency to establish a maximum award each year to fit the amount available into the appropriation, but provide earlier information to the post-secondary institutions and the students about how much their award would be. And then finally, the one that's a little bit more complicated to explain is the Minnesota College Savings Plan, technical fix. The Minnesota College Savings Plan is a tax-advantaged investment to help families save for college. It is administered by the Office of Higher Education, and the office contracts with TIAA, the Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association of America, to operate the program. From the creation of the program in 2001 through tax year 2010, the state provided matching grants to the adult counts of children whose parents had family incomes of $80,000 or less. The matching grants to those funds were $300 to $400 a year. The matching grant was eliminated in the 2009 legislative session when we were in the bad recession. The College Savings Plan itself continues to exist, but no new families received matching grants after tax year 2010. Many account owners in the program signed up for electronic access to their accounts rather than receiving paper statements. TIAA disabled views of the matching grant accounts during 2013. Those account owners who received paper statements continued to receive a second paper statement tracking the earnings on their portions of the matching grants. During 2018, TIAA determined that matching grant owners who had chosen only electronic correspondence had not been receiving any updates or notifications about their matching grants. TIAA determined that more than 3,500 accounts were impacted. This language provides that if the person who is the beneficiary of the account does, the regular language provides that if the person who is the beneficiary of the account does not use the matching funds by the time he or she is 28 or older, the matching funds revert to the state general fund. This language, because these matching funds were not used because the owners did not know that the matching funds were there, this language would establish session law that would permit the Office of Higher Education to give the account owners access to the matching funds for 2 years, even if the person who is the beneficiary of the account is now age 28 or older. So that's what's in the amendment. Madam Chair, we did ask that people from Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota be here to speak to the riders and the university specials if the committee has questions on those items.
Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question to start with in the bill for probably some in-state person to be able to respond. And it's on page 12. And it might be specific to a...
How are you, Connie Bernardi?
Yeah, I'm going to be on page 12. So I just have a question. So it's 12.18 to 12.22, and then 12.23 to 12.34. These are actually things that came from the first one, something that I've done in the past. I just wanted to know what the anticipation is and how many online ag courses have been, and you might not have this information today, but if I could just find out how many online ag courses have been created by the Farm Business Management faculty at the colleges, and just getting a listing of what those are and how much, how many they've done. Curious about that. And then on the 12.23 to 12.34, I know that that previously had been a program that was kind of a pilot program, and so I just wanted to know where we have veterans to ag. And I know there's a program that you're asking for them to provide a report, but I think that it's been in place for a couple of years. So I just would like to know really what is going on with that and where it's being used and how much it's being used. And, you know, I want to make sure those are valuable and continue to be valuable and meaningful. And so I just am curious about those. So thank you.
And if you would please state your name for the record before you begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Rothschild, and I am the Senior System Director for Workforce Development at Minnesota State. And I help at the system level to work with our Farm Business Management Program, which has been the primary delivery mechanism for these two programs that Representative Papadi has requested information about. I also manage the program for our Centers of Excellence. We have two Centers of Excellence in Agriculture, one serving northern Minnesota and the other serving southern Minnesota. And those two centers have actually direct responsibility for the Farm Business Management programs with the presidents of the eight colleges that host Farm Business Management. So sorry for the complicated explanation of the structure. But as to the online course development for Farm Business Management, the work has primarily been focused on creating the infrastructure for faculty in Farm Business Management to offer courses online. So, for example, there's a home place, meaning in our online repository of courses for faculty to offer online Farm Business Management courses. A statewide curriculum toolbox has been developed. All faculty in Farm Business Management, we have 67 faculty, have received a basic level of training in using online delivery. It was very unfamiliar to them. It's a one-on-one instructional program with farmers in their homes typically. And so this new model of development has been very important for our Farm Business FBM faculty to learn about. We have case studies and tools. Specifically, the class that has been offered most is a Farm Business Management Marketing class, and what they're working on is a record-keeping systems class. So this will be very helpful for those farmers working with their lenders to have the appropriate financial records so that they can get the loans that they need. The next, after that, a fiscal year 19 objective is an essentials certificate. It's 30 credits. I don't actually know what's in an essentials course, but that's what the report says. And then, of course, they'll continue to market this to recruit students to come into the program through online delivery and continuing to train faculty to use the tool online and hybrid. So it's a very valuable program for us, and we appreciate the support.
Representative Papi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then regarding the veterans to ag, yeah. If you can give me that information, I'd appreciate that. And I appreciate that you mentioned the two centers of excellence. And I just wanted to make a comment. You know, I chair the ag and food finance division here, and we have had a request by Representative Poston, who represents the Northern Center of Excellence, to actually fund, to provide some funding for those two centers. And so I'm curious about that because, you know, as an ag division, you know, we're not higher ed. And there seems to be a number of situations that sometimes those intersect, and we seem to be being asked to provide some funding to higher ed. Perhaps higher ed maybe gets that same kind of tug and pull, and that they're asked to provide funding in other areas as well. But I just was curious because it seems as though they must be underfunded, because they're coming forward and asking for money from us in the ag budget. And so I guess I'm curious about that and would like to know, you know, is there a better way for the higher ed budget to better support the centers of ag? I think this is one where if the pilot project has now kind of gotten into full development, then maybe there's a different route here that should be taken. So if you would have any comments about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me address the Veterans to Agriculture program first, and then I'll talk a little bit more about the Centers of Excellence. The Veterans to Agriculture program has been primarily one of promoting the idea that veterans can seek a variety of jobs in the agriculture industry. So it's not necessarily to be a producer or a direct farmer, but to look at the agribusiness opportunities. So there, most of the support for the Veterans to Agriculture has been in the promotion of the agriculture industry with all of the occupational opportunities available to them. It has been difficult to identify and really measure how many veterans have gone from this promotional activity into farming or production. But that said, there continues to be a great deal of work done in partnership with the department, the Veterans Department, and the Department of Agriculture. So that is one of the benefits of the Centers of Excellence, generally across all of the six industries that they represent, and the two in agriculture, is that they partner with other state agencies to try and encourage employment and growth opportunities through education in these areas. So I'll give you a couple of examples of how the funding has been used in the Veterans to Agriculture pilot program. We have distributed 3,900 publications to 1,400 farmers to promote the Ag Spark, the Ag Warriors, and the Veterans to Agriculture. These are each individual programs, some run by the Department of Agriculture. We've done radio messaging to promote agriculture careers to veterans on 19 radio stations in all areas of greater Minnesota in very rural areas. We've held post-secondary summits on agriculture, food, and natural resources with faculty. And, of course, farm business management is one of the main ways that we try and reach out to veterans who might be interested in agriculture careers. So it's really a promotion of agriculture as a career with all sorts of resources and kind of connecting all sorts of state agency level support. I don't have a lot of details. I don't think about what they intend to do with the money coming forward if it were to be included in the omnibus bill and passed and signed by the governor, but working with the six farm business management colleges, I think, is the primary delivery method there. Relative to the Centers of Excellence and the work that they do, we started out with funding from the legislature for this program about 15 years ago, and we funded four Centers of Excellence. We now have eight Centers of Excellence in agriculture, the two there, engineering, manufacturing, IT, healthcare, energy, and transportation. We're trying to do more with less, in the sense that instead of just doing four centers, we've developed eight of them with the same amount of funding. So these supplemental or additional funds and programs designed to work through the centers are very valuable to those programs, and we appreciate that very much. I can't really speak to how They should be supported, but Minnesota State has had a really strong commitment to those programs, and most of the industry folks that, or all of them that I'm aware of, are very appreciative of a single point of contact and some of the thought leadership and innovation that comes through the centers, both in terms of curriculum and working with students.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and just one more comment, I think. I just think that we need to make sure that as we create new and as we develop initiatives, that we just need to keep in mind that ongoing funding is necessary in order to continue to provide the access, the resources necessary, the ability to do the job, and if we're not able to do that, then we need to relook at how we're funding or trying to support things, and if they maybe can't be met with the resources that are currently allotted within the system, there might need to be some reconfiguration.
I have a couple questions, too, but these would be back to the Department of Higher Education. Thank you, Ms. Rothschild. So one question that I have, I just want to understand the teacher candidate grant program. 120 students have received these grants. And then, so for the, as candidate, does that mean this is, would be helping them in their student teaching year?
Madam Chair, yes.
Ms. Grimes.
Yes, this is designed to help them in student teaching. In the past, it was discovered that there were a number of people of color who wanted to become teachers who could not afford to stop working as a teacher's aide or another employee of a school district long enough to complete the student teacher aspect of their mm-hmm. curriculum. And this is grants designed to help them make it through that particular time period and be able to get their teacher certificate and become fully licensed mm-hmm. teachers.
Thank you. And so certainly yesterday when we heard the bill about what we needed to do to promote and encourage teachers of colors, that was certainly something that we heard over and over again, was not having any income that year and being a teacher. Is it just need-based then on how these grants are awarded?
Madam Chair, I think I'm going to have to get back to you on that. That is a new program that happened while I was retired, and I'm not totally up to speed on that one. I'm sorry.
Thank you. And then my second question is to understand a little bit more about Subdivision 16, MinLink, Gateway, and Minitex, and it talked about libraries and databases and support for those. And I'm wondering if there – we also heard from Representative Wolgamott, who's not here, about open source textbooks and encouraging faculty at Minnesota State to coordinate so that there's more availability of these. And so is there a connection between these bills and this funding?
Madam Chair, Minitex and MinLink are actually housed at the University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. They started, I want to say, about 30 years ago, perhaps a little longer than that, as interlibrary loan, when we used to ship books from one place to another, rather than every library purchasing additional resources. Over time, it has evolved into mostly purchasing online databases, many of which are scholarly journals and other things that are accessible to post-secondary institutions, but also resources that are accessible to county library systems throughout the state. Mm-hmm. And the state gets quite a bit of economy of scale in purchasing licenses for access to these databases statewide rather than making each library system or post-secondary institution purchase them separately.
Okay.
They tend to be Minitex and MinLink are really a library program that they do have some textbooks, but textbooks actually tend to be a somewhat different function than Minitex and MinLink.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Right. One more question.
All right. Seeing no more discussion, right. Any closing words on the walkthrough that we've just had?
I don't have any closing. Well, thank you for being here today and walking us through this. I think we've had quite an opportunity to get to know about this bill, so thank you very much. I wanted to let members know what the upcoming schedule is. And Thursday, which is tomorrow, April 4th, we'll do the DE amendment to House File 2544 will be posted. And one of the things I didn't mention at the beginning, this the person in the Senate who was the author of the bill is Senator Paul Anderson, who is the higher chair as well. And then on Monday, April 8th, we'll walk through the omnibus bill and receive public testimony. And that's from 11:30 to 2:15. And we do have backup if we need it, correct? And the backup time would be to come back after session at, well, whenever we're done with session. And hopefully we could wrap it up in an hour. So it's really how much the how much testimony we have and the questions members have. And so I'm hoping that we don't have to do that because there's a big basketball game going on that night that the members and people in that here in this room may want to watch and or even attend here in Minnesota. So I wanted to let you know that's our backup if we need to meet into the meeting because we want to make sure we do provide the public testimony opportunity. And then Tuesday, April 9th, the omnibus amendment deadline will be at 10 a.m. And we've talked with the House DFL Caucus and Representative Nornes and staff, I believe, is how it was handled, that this schedule was okay with you as well before I'm reading this. I just want to just verify that, yeah. Okay, and then 2:30 to 4, there will be an omnibus markup and vote. And then so we'll be complete with the bill then. And then on Wednesday, April 10th, we'll have a hearing from 2:30 to 4 as usual, and it will be on the Argosy University hearing.
Mm-hmm. And, we have two things. One is that also this is a public meeting, and we are welcoming actually also public testimony. And then I think we particularly would like one more comment from Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just... right behind you, you might not know some come in, but we were joined by some University of Minnesota Morris students, and maybe they want to give us a 30-second commercial about how great Morris is, but if that's the chair's pleasure. But it's nice to see them today. And
well, we could
public testimony.
However you want to handle it.
Yeah, you're welcome to do public testimony and the importance of this. We welcome that. And we also have University of Minnesota students, Twin City Student Campus as well. And Is there any other students out there from
MD?
Woo, woo! And, University of Minnesota, Crookston.
All right.
And Duluth. All right. We're missing anyone from University of Minnesota, Rochester? No? Okay. Okay, so we're expecting public testimony out of you today. That's your class assignment.
And it's impromptu, so if anybody would like to come forward and talk about your experience as a student, it is we are open for public testimony, and we are talking about the budget for our higher ed system. There you are. And all you have to do is come forward to the microphone and state your name for the record, and we can allow up to 2 minutes.
Oh my gosh, I'll injure our testifiers.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me. So my name is Samuel Rosemark. I am a current University of Minnesota Morris student, current sophomore. I am studying political science and economics at the University of Minnesota Morris, and I'm minoring in environmental leadership and stewardship. So I just want to say that today is Support the U-Day, if you're not aware. So we have university students from across all of the campuses coming here today to get their representatives to support the U. My representative, Leon Lilly, is here. So, yes, exactly. But the University of Minnesota promotes opportunities for students and Minnesotans across the state in a time of economic growth and a time of Minnesota prospering. We need highly educated students to fill those jobs and to be their future leaders. Specifically at the University of Minnesota Morris campus, we also provide lots of opportunities in terms of close connections with faculty and students that provide students with internships, letter of recommendations and whatnot, study abroad opportunities as well, and that's across all University of Minnesota systems. University of Minnesota Morris campus specifically is one of the most diverse campuses across Minnesota. Two-thirds of our students are underrepresented populations. 20% are Native American students. We have the Native American tuition waiver at our campus. And then also another 10% are students of color. And 40% are actually first-generation students at the Morris campus as well. So if there are any questions at all, I'd be happy to answer questions, I guess. But I hope you all support the U, and thank you so much. I hear there's a good budget request rolling through here soon, so it should be good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And anyone else that would like to give public testimony? All right, and seeing no more discussion. Oh, one more. All right, we got it. Please come forward.
I'm kind of tall, so I'll sit back here and do the best I can.
If you can state your name for the record and up to 1 to 2, 1 or 2 minutes of testimony.
Hi, committee members, Mark Hughes, Chair Bernardi. The University of Minnesota has long been something that I've tried to support for years because I'm a Carlson School alumni and celebrating its 100th year this year as an anniversary. We had our first Tuesday alumni one. We're reminded of that, but that's not what's important. Over those years, it has turned out 46,000 graduates, and I got lucky enough to be one, but it provided me the tools of yesterday to prepare for tomorrow. And I think the same point as the students that are here today for Support the U-Day are trying to get the message across, that they need the tools to get ready for their journey of tomorrow, today, at the University of Minnesota. But we can provide that if the economics and the budget is set right. Because what's important is that the University of Minnesota stay alive to support our students so they can graduate and become successful people in the community. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you. And see no more testimony or discussion? Or
I'm
questions?
Sure, I think someone's coming up. I see movement behind me.
And please state your name for the record. And you have 1 or 2 minutes here for testimony. Thank you.
Riley Fletcher. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, representatives and members. I am a freshman at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities right now, and I honestly don't think that a lot of universities could offer the resources at the level that the university does, and I think that it excels in that. I think that a school of 50,000 students, it's hard to not just be lost in the numbers. And I don't think many students feel like they're lost in the numbers at the U, even though it's a school of 50,000. Like, I think one thing you hear coming in as a freshman is, oh, like, it'll feel a lot smaller after you get here. And I don't think a lot of people really believe that. And I truly believe, like, it's a huge campus, but it has turned into a home, and it has turned into a place where I can be exposed to so many different viewpoints and so many different areas across the cities. But it's also given me the opportunity. I'm studying abroad in Jordan next semester, and that's not a place that typically people would think to travel to. And I think it has just offered so many opportunities, and most of the students here are part of the student government at the U at some level. And that student government has given us the opportunity to practice our political voices and practice our roles in advocacy and our roles in shaping the university of tomorrow and in practicing turning the world into what we think it should be, and it has shown us how to be better leaders, to be better voices, and to be better people. So thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Nornes, you have a question or comment?
I just have a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I wanted to welcome all the students here. As a former chair of this committee and very interested in higher education, it's good to see you. And I guess what really stands out is, you know, it's good to see all these young people dressed in suits and ties, and, you know, it's really nice. You're representing your generation very well today, and I just wanted to, I'm impressed.
Thank you.
And you dress up like that every day, I presume, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
good. Keep it up.
All right, and well, you still have to state your name for the record.
Yeah.
Please state your name for the record.
Yeah, hi, Madam Chair. My name is Christina Bush. I am a graduating student. I'm a senior at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I major in political science with minors in business law, management, and leadership. And I wanted to share a little bit about my U of M story and how it relates to my family. Both of my siblings attend the University of Minnesota along with myself. My sister, she's also graduating. She's going on to work for a national news publication. My younger brother, he now works at a financial advising firm downtown. The education we've received at the University of Minnesota has been really impactful because we come up from a very small town in rural Minnesota. So it's been super fantastic to have these professional opportunities. As in my time as a student at the university, I've had the opportunity to take world-class classes with world-class professors, have plenty of professional development opportunities. Like, I've interned here. I've interned on campaigns. I've worked with veteran communities, immigrant communities, refugee communities, all that sort of thing. And that's just in, like, 2.5 years that I've been here. And that's really fantastic. So I just want to really share my support for funding for the University of Minnesota and everything that it accomplishes. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bush. And then just to show that you've taken advantage of all these opportunities, can you demonstrate your political knowledge that you know who your representative is?
Yes, I do. Yes, my representative is Representative Dean Erdahl. I saw him a little bit earlier today at the Legacy Funding Committee. And then I also have Senator Scott Newman, who I think he's floating around today. So I'll try and catch him. Nice. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bush.
Yeah, thank you.
And please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Sydney Leckler, and I would just like to open an invitation to all of you to come to our ice cream social that we're having later today.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 1 to 3? No, okay.
We're calling a friend.
Four to five, room 316 of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Hello,
thank
everyone.
You, and please state your name for the record.
Yeah, so my name is Maggie Mills. I am currently a senior at the University of Minnesota Crookston studying marketing and communication with a minor in animal science. And I'm from Lake City, Minnesota. So does anyone know where that is? Southeast? Anyone?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I guess from my perspective, kind of going off of the family aspect, both my sisters attended the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus, and they were both animal science. And so originally I was going to go to the Twin Cities, but then I was like, you know what, let's go try Crookston for a little bit. And here I am four years later. So it's had a really big impact on our family, and I think, I think the one thing that I want to say is that when my sister was considering going to campus, my family as dairy farmers were like, we don't know if we can afford this. But they were able to both get full-time, or how would you describe it? Full scholarships. Yep, that's what I'm going for. But they were both able to attend for free. And so the length that goes to, I think, is huge. And so thank you for helping our family. And now we can all be University of Minnesota alums.
And I believe that we have another comment or question from Representative Nornes.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I just again, want to welcome you, too, along with the other students. And if you want to do a road trip sometime, get on Highway 9, go south about 17 miles, and that's where I would, that's where I was born.
Oh, very cool. So you're up in the neck of the woods.
Slow down, otherwise you miss the town.
Yeah. A lot of students go on 9 to travel from the cities up, so it's a very long road, a very straight road, too.
Flat.
So.
Very flat.
Yes. Okay. Any other questions, comments?
No.
All right, thank you.
Sweet.
All right, well, having no more public testifying, hearing no more discussion from our committee, we are adjourned.